Shalom, welcome to AshJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Harav Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, yes, you're seeing a video version of AshJTF. We're going to try this out. We may not do this every week. This is just experimental. Let's see how it works out, and let's see how our fellow JTFers like this format. One of the advantages of this format is it gives us the ability to put the program in its entirety on ZooTube, and maybe that'll get us new people. So that's the real reason why we're doing this, because we also want to be able to put it on ZooTube and hopefully attract a new audience. Before we get to our many questions, though, I want to start out by speaking about John Kerry and Barack Hussein Obama. Yimach shmam v'zichram, shem reshaim yirkav, may their names and memories be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Kerry and Obama this week were blaming Israel and the Jews for the Arab-Muslim-Nazi terrorist mass murder that's taking place. Arab-Muslim-Nazi terrorists are stabbing Jews all over Israel. Dozens and dozens of stabbing incidents or attempted stabbing incidents in cities and towns all over Israel. And of course, shooting at Jews, trying to run Jews over with motor vehicles, doing everything they can to murder Jews. And all of this is applauded by the entire Arab news media, by the entire Muslim news media, by all the Arab members of the Knesset. All of the Muslim leaders and imams are applauding this. Mahmoud Abbas, who also calls himself Abu Mazen, is applauding these attacks. He's saying that these are heroes. He's saying that they should continue to do this. He's naming streets after Muslim terrorists that stab Jewish babies and Jewish children to death, or that murder Jews. He's naming streets after them, calling them martyrs and heroes and shahidim. Shahidim are the Muslims that are willing to commit suicide while murdering non-Muslim infidels, which the Quran and the Hadith and the Islamic religion praise. They say, if you're willing to give your life, if you're a Muslim, you're supposed to be willing to give your life to murder as many non-Muslims as possible just because they're not Muslim. That's the wonderful religion of peace that we're being told is a religion of peace. Anyway, Kerry and Obama have proven this week that they want Jews to be stabbed to death, that they want terrorism. They support the Muslim terrorists 100% and support the destruction of Israel and the destruction of the Jewish people. They've proven this once again this week. John Kerry and Barack Hussein Obama are saying that the Israelis are the terrorists. The State Department said it's the Israelis that are committing acts of terrorism. It's the Israelis that are the terrorists. Can you imagine Israeli soldiers or Israeli police or Israeli civilians shoot to death Arabs that are stabbing them in the act of stabbing them? And they shoot one of the Arab terrorists to death. And when they do this in self-defense, John Kerry and the State Department and Barack Hussein Obama say that Israel is committing acts of terrorism, that Israel is showing too much force for stopping people from stabbing their women and children. What would happen if in the United States Muslim terrorists were running around in every American city now? Every day you heard about Muslim terrorists running around with knives, stabbing women and children and stabbing people. If someone shot the Muslim stabber to death, would they say, oh, the person who shot him to death to defend innocent people from being stabbed to death, that person who shot the Muslim terrorist to death, that's the real terrorist? That's what Kerry and the State Department said this week. And John Kerry said that Jewish settlements are responsible for this. He blamed the Jewish settlements. What are Jewish settlements? The rights of Jews to live in their own homeland. Because Kerry and Obama and Hillary Sodom Clinton are against Jews living in their own homeland. It's so obvious that their goal is the destruction of Israel and that they want Jews to be stabbed to death, and they support the Muslim terrorists that are murdering Jews and slaughtering Jews. And all this time, Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli leaders, the Likud, Naftali Bennett, the so-called Jewish Home Party, Moshe Yaalon, who is the so-called defense minister of Israel, all of the Israeli leaders are begging Kerry and begging Obama for a meeting. They say, we want to meet, we want to coordinate with you, you're our loyal allies. This is how they respond to these Jew-hating scum leaders in Washington, Obama and Kerry, blaming Israel? Well, Jews are being stabbed to death all over the place, and they're saying the stabbers are right, and the stabbing victims are the real guilty party? And they're taking and accepting this, and saying, well, let's have a meeting now, let's continue to have a meeting with our allies, Obama and Kerry. They're our allies, they're our friends. This is what Netanyahu and Bennett and all the leaders of Israel are doing. They're meeting with them and accepting this like nothing happened. What should they be doing? They should be saying Israel must become completely independent. We don't want foreign aid. The $3 billion a year the United States gives to Israel is completely harmful to Israel, disastrous and counterproductive. The best thing you could do for Israel is to cut off all the foreign aid immediately. That's the best thing you could do. And have Israel, which Israel can easily do it, become completely militarily, economically self-sufficient. Then Israel could sell weapons in the international market, make billions of dollars that she's not making right now. Israel's not making billions of dollars in weapons sales because the United States vetoes the weapons sales to India and to other countries that want to buy Israeli weapons. Many countries in Latin America want to buy Israeli weapons. The United States vetoes it and has power to veto it because they say, hey, we're giving you foreign aid, you got to do what we tell you to do. Israel could be self-sufficient in energy, economically. Israel could be booming economically if they only would end this insane dependence, this artificial dependence upon U.S. foreign aid. But we have leaders who are hopelessly mired in a ghetto mentality. And so the Jewish people in Israel are paying a terrible price. And then their response in regard to Mahmoud Abbas Abu Mazen, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, the Arab Hitler, who is the head of the PLO Fatah terrorists, they're giving him billions of dollars. Netanyahu is giving, and Israeli taxpayers, giving him billions of dollars. Giving him free electricity, free water, free food, free medicine. Everything for free. Free housing, free education. Israeli taxpayers pay for all of this. If the Israeli taxpayers weren't giving them all of this, they'd be starving. They'd have to leave. They would leave the land of Israel. But no, Netanyahu wants to make everything comfortable for them so they'll stay and have more and more babies and continue to grow until they endanger Israel's very survival. So yes, we've done videos and we've conducted a campaign this week. You've seen our Hebrew and English videos exposing this. Thousands of Israeli Jews are being exposed to our message. At least thousands. It's nothing compared to what's needed. Yes, there are 6 million Israeli Jews. I wish we were reaching all of them with our message. If only, God willing, we were reaching all of them with our message, we could save Israel and the Jewish people. We could change Jewish history overnight if we could reach the whole people of Israel with our message. But at least thousands of Israeli Jews, mostly young Jews who are the future of Israel, are seeing our message every week. And that's important. The more people that see our message, the better it is, the more important it is, and the more successful we'll be in creating a foundation, a background, for eventually building a real right in Israel, a real right-wing movement and real right-wing political parties, because that's what's needed. We need a Kahanist right-wing movement in Israel, a true Kahanist right-wing movement. We're definitely paving the road for that with what we're doing. But the more people we reach and the more successful we are and the stronger we are, the better it is for Israel. I just hope that we can do this, that we can reach enough people and wake enough people up before it's too late. I just hope we can. We're fighting an uphill battle here. Because of our limited budget, we're fighting an uphill battle. But we need your help. We as a team in JTF, in both our English language movement in America and our Hebrew language movement in Israel, we've got to work together as a team and do everything we can. Help us promote our Hebrew and English videos when you see us put videos up. Promote it on YouTube, on Facebook, everywhere else. Help us promote those videos. Help us by being active on our news pages. If you speak Hebrew, on hayamin.org, that's our Hebrew news page. If you don't speak Hebrew, then at least on the English news page, jtf.org, very important, please be active. Shlomo does a wonderful job. There are constant new articles every day. You go there every day, you're going to learn something new. There's tremendous important news there every day, jtf.org. Help us with that. Put comments on there, check it every day. It helps us. It helps with the search engines. Tell your friends about it. Tell other people about it. Let people go to that news page on a daily basis. It's the best news page on the internet if you want to know what's happening, certainly with Israel and the Jewish people. And, of course, every check, every money order, every cash donation made out to our post office box, sent to our post office box, made out to JTF and sent to our post office box, it makes a big difference. There's some people who, some great JTFers who send us generous financial contributions on a regular basis to the post office box. Others, for convenience sake, would prefer to do it with their credit card through PayPal on the internet because they feel that's more convenient. It makes no difference to us. Either way, you're helping us. Every donation makes a difference. It strengthens us. The stronger we are, the more people we can reach, the better our chances of hopefully saving Israel from the madness of her own leaders and from the just general insanity of Jews who, after thousands of years of exile, have gone nuts. And believe me, a lot of Israeli Jews, when they hear our message resonates with them. They say a lot of what you're saying makes sense. Our message resonates with them. So give us this chance. Give us this opportunity and help us and let's work together. Let's work together. By the way, those of you that want to help us online, that want to make a contribution online, you just go to hayamin.org, which is our Hebrew main page. And on top, there's a donate button in English. Everything is in Hebrew on that page except for the donate button on top, which is in English. Let's work together. Let's fight together. And God willing, I hope we can make a difference before it's too late, because the madness of what we're seeing in Israel is just horrifying. Jews are being murdered. Jews are being stabbed to death. Jews are being run over. Jews are being shot to death. It's a horrible situation. And it's something that we warned was going to happen, that our great leader, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik, V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, warned about decades ago, many decades ago. He warned about it since the 1960s. He's been warning about this. All of it is coming true. All of it is coming true, tragically. And we have to. We have to wake the people of Israel up, or terrible, terrible disaster is on the way, is looming on the horizon. God forbid. God forbid. Okay, let's get to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what is your view on the Salem witch trials?" Unquote. Well, the Salem witch trials took place in 17th century Massachusetts. And the people in those witch trials were not given due process. There was not a true trial situation. They were accused of committing witchcraft. At least 20 people were put to death. At least 20 people were killed in the Salem witch trials. So it really was a miscarriage of justice. It's not the way things should be done. And whether or not they were actually engaging in witchcraft, I don't know. But they weren't given true due process. It was a mob mentality without real rules of evidence, and people were put to death. So it's not one of the brighter spots of the history of the United States, pre-American history. I don't know how to describe colonial history, history in the colonial United States. In other words, in the 13 colonies of the United States before the United States of America became an independent country, because this was taking place in the 17th century. Joe Gutfeld now writes, "How did your medical procedure go?" Unquote. Thank God, yes, I announced last week that I had to have a colonoscopy. You know, I'm going to be 59 years old very soon, in a few weeks, and you really should start having colonoscopies at the age of 50. 50 or above, you got to start getting regular testing if you're a man. And women, there are things women should be testing for after the age of 50 as well. Because, you know, if God forbid you have cancer or some other problem, if you catch it soon enough, they now can treat it, and they now have a very high cure rate. But if you don't catch it soon enough, of course, it's a disaster. It can lead to death, God forbid. thank God, Baruch Hashem, thank God, my tests went very well, and they didn't find anything. They're not only was there nothing malignant, God forbid, there was nothing even benign, no polyps, no growths, nothing else. The test went very well, Baruch Hashem. Thank you, Joe, and we go now to Yimach Shmo to Islam, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, thoughts on the following people. Okay, and then Yimach Shmo to Islam lists a number of people. He starts out with Peter Allen. Peter Allen, well, he was a homosexual musician. I don't know much about his music, but I know he was a homosexual musician who died of AIDS, who was very active in the AIDS movement and the so-called ACT UP movement, and he died of throat cancer related to AIDS, because you become much more vulnerable to developing cancer and other diseases when you have AIDS, because AIDS is an attack on the immune system, and he died of AIDS. So, what can I say? Obviously, this is not someone who led a lifestyle and conducted himself in a way which is moral. He was someone who did bad things in his life. Next person on the list is Keith Haring. Keith Haring was a homosexual artist who died of AIDS. I don't even remember exactly what the, you know, I don't remember exactly what the disease was, but it was AIDS-related. He died of something that was AIDS-related. He was actually, in the 1980s, running around saying that everybody has to have safe sex, and he was promoting safe sex. He said if homosexuals have safe sex, there won't be a danger of them getting AIDS. So even though he was the spokesman for safe sex, he got AIDS. So much for safe sex. And next on the list is Raven Simone. I don't know if you pronounce it Simone or a black, you know, she's a black actress and black singer who appears on The View, that hideous program, The View. But she said some interesting things. I mean, first of all, of course, her so-called music, hip-hop and other garbage is not music. It's just trash. But she said some interesting things. She said that she doesn't want to be called an African-American. She wants to be called an American, not an African-American. That was interesting. That was interesting because that's unusual. She also said that calling Michelle Obama a monkey, that there's nothing wrong with that. It's legitimate to call her a monkey because some people look like animals, she said. Some people look like monkeys. This is actually what she said. I mean, this was great. I thought was great. You remember there was someone for the Hispanic television network who said that Michelle Obama looks like she should be on the cast of Planet of the Apes, that she looks like an ape. That's what this guy said on the Hispanic television station. And, of course, he was fired, a Hispanic television network owned by a self-hating Israeli Jew, of course. And he was fired. This guy was fired for saying that. And we actually did a video about this particular subject. And she said at the time, and she really angered people when she said it, listen, some people do look like monkeys. What's wrong with him saying that? That he's expressing his opinion. That was pretty good. So even though I don't like her hip-hop and I don't like, you know, she basically was saying to Ann Coulter that she was a racist, and the whole racist garbage and all the other stuff that she's involved with, even though I don't like that, she's made some statements that I actually did like. When she defends people for calling Michelle Obama a monkey, that's pretty good. That's not bad for a black actress, and that's someone who's standing against certain forms of political correctness. So, you know, with her, I would say it's a mixed bag with her. And the next person on the list is Adam Levine. Well, Adam Levine, he had a Jewish father, non-Jewish mother. He's a singer and an actor, for those of you who don't know. His brother is an open homosexual, and therefore he's very active in promoting the homosexual marriage. He's very active in promoting the whole homosexual agenda. So what he's doing is bad. He promotes left-wing causes and homosexual causes. His brother is a homosexual. So he's promoting something that's bad. And so again, a bad influence on society. And finally, Jason Collins. Jason Collins, for those of you who don't know, I didn't know this until he came out in the news and said that he was an open homosexual, but he's a retired black basketball player who came out and said that he's homosexual. Again, promoting evil things, promoting something bad, trying to legitimize and glorify a lifestyle that the Bible says is an abomination, that God says is an abomination. So obviously that's a bad influence. And I want to thank you, Mashmoda Islam. We go now to DGR81. Dear Chaim, has JTF considered using crowdfunding sites, GoFundMe.com, etc., to try to raise money for a specific project or for specific projects, unquote? That's a good question. I don't know enough about this. I don't know how that would work. It's anything that will help us raise money so we could promote our cause and so that we could reach more people is worthy of exploration. I don't know enough about it, but it's an interesting suggestion. It's something that maybe we should consider. I don't know enough about it. But thanks for the suggestion, DGR. It's something maybe that we should look into. Now we go to Yisrael Chai, who writes, and I quote, "Fast declared today in response to stabbings. What else can ordinary Jews do right now?" Unquote. I think we have to wake Jews up. We have to wake the Jews of Israel up. That's the best thing we can do. Help us promote our videos where we explain to the Jews of Israel that there is no solution. It's them or it's us. There is no solution. We cannot coexist with millions of people in the land of Israel who hate the Jewish people and who want to exterminate the Jewish people, who believe that as a religious duty, they have to exterminate the Jews. We cannot coexist with people like that. So we have to wake the people of Israel up before it's too late. Help us promote our videos. Help us promote our message. Help us promote our news site to as many people as you can. Help us get that message across. And help us elect Ted Cruz as president. Ted Cruz has taken the right stand on most issues. On some issues, there are some issues where I don't agree with him. But he's taken the right stand on most issues, especially in regard to a nuclear Iran and especially in regard to not pressuring Israel. So we should be working to elect Ted Cruz. He's definitely the best choice. And if you help us with that, that's doing something, at least doing something, to try to alleviate the terrible situation in Israel. I agree, by the way, I'd like to do much more. If we had a multi-million-dollar budget, we could do much more. We'd be a major force in Israeli politics if we had a multi-million-dollar budget, but we don't. So what do? We're still obligated to do whatever we can. And next question from Yisrael Chai. Who was Rav Kahana's rabbi before the chief Sephardic rabbi? Thank you. Rabbi Kahana's rabbi was Harav Mordechai Eliyahu Zatzal, which means may his name and memory be immortalized. Rabbi Kahana did go to the chief Sephardic rabbi Harav Eliyahu when he had halachic questions, but that was since the 1970s. Now, Yisrael Chai is asking who was his chief rabbi before that? Before the early 1970s, before he made Aliyah, which he did in 1971, I was only 14 years old in 1971 when he made Aliyah and when he started turning to Rabbi Eliyahu. So I don't know what he did before that. I don't know who his chief rabbi was in the 1960s, for instance, in the United States. That I don't know the question to, because I was too young to know. I didn't even know Rabbi Kahana before 1971. So I don't know the answer to that. Thank you, Yisrael Chai. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Brocks, who writes, and I quote, "How should we handle devout Orthodox rabbis who say that as fellow monotheists and their brothers from Abraham, Muslims warrant some level of respect," unquote. So-called rabbis who try to legitimize Islamic terrorist theology and Islamic terrorist hate mongering are a blight and a cancer for the Jewish people. They're a cancer on the Jewish people. These so-called rabbis are a disgrace to Jews, Their ignorance is exceeded only by their arrogance. They know nothing about Muslims. And they are leading Jews down the path to self-destruction. We should present the facts and oppose what they're saying and expose the fact that what they're saying has already led to a bloodbath for the Jewish people. Tens of thousands of Jews have been murdered in the land of Israel since the creation of the state of Israel because of this type of sick mentality, this self-hating mentality. And I don't care if it's a so-called Orthodox rabbi, a self-hating Jew is a self-hating Jew. Their self-hating mentality of trying to suck up to our enemies and of trying to legitimize that which is illegitimate and evil and monstrous and bloodthirsty is inexcusable. And we should expose them. We should expose them and fight against it and oppose what they're saying. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, compare Ben Carson today and Larry Flint in 2008. I see many similarities, such as their lazy, half-asleep persona, unquote. Okay, when Lewinsky Stinks refers to Larry Flint, he means Fred Thompson, who was the former senator from Tennessee who ran for president in 2008. I agree with you, Lewinsky Stinks. I think that Ben Carson is the way he speaks so slowly, and he's so lazy, and he's so laid back, and some of the crazy things he does. He announced he's taking 2 weeks off of the campaign so he could sell his book. I mean, the middle of a hot campaign when he's running second in the polls, and in some polls he's tied with Donald Trump for first place, and in a campaign like that, in the heat of a campaign, he's saying, I'm taking 2 weeks off so I could sell my books, so I could promote my books. I mean, just what a farce. What a farce, how crazy people are to have this lunatic individual, this joke, being considered for president of the United States. Ben Carson is a joke. His campaign manager, Armstrong Williams, supports Louis Farrakhan. Wants taxpayers to support Louis Farrakhan and defends Louis Farrakhan. It's just, and of course, Ben Carson himself has said that his goal is the same as Al Sharpton's goal. I mean, how insane can people be? Just insane. So I agree with you that the laziness, because he's lazy. By the way, Marco Rubio is also lazy. Marco Rubio is also a very lazy person. He doesn't even show up to vote in the Senate. He's just lazy. He isn't on the campaign trail, and he's not voting in the Senate. He says he likes to spend time listening to hip-hop and rap music. That's what Marco Rubio says. This is who we want to make president. Instead of doing his job and voting as a senator, he wants to spend time. And he's not even spending the time campaigning for president as much. He's much less on the trail than other candidates. Marco Rubio is lazy. Ben Carson is lazy. To have someone who's lazy as president, we already have someone who plays golf all day and plays basketball all day as President Barack Hussein Obama. Is this someone that you consider for president of the United States? Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, your opinion on Israel's gun control laws. I believe that Israel should not have restrictions on the rights of Jews who have to defend themselves to bear arms. The enemies of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, Arab Muslims, should not be allowed to have arms because they've made it clear that they hate Israel and that they think Israel should be destroyed. You can't give, if they were allowed to be armed, we'd be in trouble. So you have a situation here where, once again, we can't correct this problem until we have a realistic program to encourage the Arab Muslim enemies of Israel to leave. We've got to encourage them to leave. Those who have been involved in terrorism, anyone who's a terrorist should be killed. Muslim terrorists should be killed. Immediately, they should be killed. Families and others who have expressed support for terrorism in any way should be expelled without compensation. Those who have no record, no proven record of supporting terrorism, but who are Arab Muslims, should be encouraged to leave with compensation if they have any property. If they have any property, they should be compensated for it, but they should be encouraged to leave. That's the only way we're going to have security in Israel. And then, when you have that situation, when we've solved that problem, every sane Jew in Israel should be allowed to have firearms to defend themselves and defend their families. That's what I think Israel's gun law should be like. But first, you've got to have an Israel that is a Jewish state and not a binational state where millions of the people in Israel are members of a religion that says that we have to conquer the whole world for Allah and we have to spread jihad all over the world, and we have to stab Jews in every Israeli city. You know, when you have a situation like that, it's very hard to change the laws. We've got to begin an aggressive program to explain to Israeli Jews why there must be a program. There must be a program to offer the Arabs a way out of Israel. And we can do it, and most Arabs would gladly leave, especially if offered compensation. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, 1. 5 Paki women buried alive for wanting to choose husbands. Baloch senator defended actions, unquote. That's something that should certainly be exposed. I'm glad you're bringing that up, Smash Islam. That's something that should be exposed. I mean, women being murdered or being burned alive because they want to choose their own husband. I mean, this is just, these types of things happen in Islamic countries. This is the norm in Islamic countries. It's just horrific. And Smash Islam writes, 2, 13-year-old Somali girl stoned after gang raped, unquote. Again, this is commonplace in Islamic countries, in Islamic society. It is not the rapist who is guilty. It is the rape victim, the woman who is raped or the girl who was raped. She's guilty. They call it honor killings. They say the family was dishonored when their daughter or someone or some female in their family was raped. The family was dishonored by this, and they murder the girl. They murder the rape victim. The rapist gets off, and they murder the rape victim. What a religion. What a religion. And the president of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama, is a Muslim. We have the president of the United States believing in this religion and defending it day and night. And, you know, and Hillary Clinton, by the way, Hillary Sodom Clinton, her main aide, Huma Abedin, is a Muslim. With her whole family are with the Muslim Brotherhood, an organization whose leader said that Hitler was wonderful and that we should, and that the Muslims should carry out the next Holocaust. Huma Abedin, that's Hillary Clinton's main aide. I mean, she'll play a major role in a Clinton administration, God forbid. And Hillary Clinton herself loves Muslims and defends Muslims and fights for Muslims. And she did it as Secretary of State, as First Lady. I mean, she would be a catastrophe. And Jews don't wake up. They don't wake up. Thank you, Smash Islam. We go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, 1, what type of collective punishment for stabbings, unquote? Great question. First of all, anyone, any town or other or place where you see people approving of this type of behavior, if they approve or applaud this type of behavior, everyone involved in approving or applauding this behavior should be expelled from Israel, no questions asked. If you support Islamic terrorism, if you express support, if you're providing backup for the Islamic terrorists, you should be expelled from Israel immediately. That certainly should be done immediately. And anyone who's actually involved in actually assisting the Muslim terrorists, anyone involved in actual acts of terrorism should be killed immediately. Dr. Dan now writes, 2, discuss Democrat debate, unquote. Well, you know, this was another example of how the media, because the Republicans allow them to get away with it, the media, with their bias, give only softball questions and make everything pleasant for the Democrats. And look at Bernie Sanders, the self-hating Jew. He had to hand Hillary Clinton the biggest victory of her campaign so far. He's supposed to be her opponent. And he's saying, we don't want anybody, we're sick and tired of listening to your damn email about your damn emails. Sick and tired of listening about the damn emails? She endangered national security to cover up her corrupt practices because she didn't want people to see the corrupt things that she's doing. That's the real reason why she wanted her own private email server, because she didn't want people to see all the corrupt things she does behind the scenes, all the dirty, illegal things she does behind the scenes. So because of her corruption, because of her dirtiness and her scandalous behavior, she's already gotten rid of most of those emails, but because of her scandalous behavior, there's no question that numerous top secret classified emails with top secret classified information was sent on her server while it was being hacked by the Chinese, the Russians, and other enemies of the United States. I mean, this is the ultimate national security scandal. She endangers all of America and will endanger the whole national security of the United States just to protect her corrupt practices. That's what this evil woman is all about. And Bernie Sanders says we're sick and tired of hearing about it. Because he's a traitor also. He's also a traitor to the United States. So he doesn't think it's any big deal that she allowed top security classified information to be sent out over an email server that was hacked. He doesn't think it's any big deal. That's the Democrat debate, the so-called Democrat debate. In the Republican debate, they don't allow the one good guy, the really good guy in the debate, Ted Cruz, they didn't even give him a chance to speak in the two Republican debates. Dr. Dana writes, 3, discuss generation pre-flood. What was it like today, unquote. Okay. Dr. Dana is referring to the Mabul. Hamabul is the flood that took place in the time of Noah and the time of Noah in the Bible. I don't know what it was like. I mean, there are all types of descriptions of what it was like, but we, you know, how much do you take literally? How much is figurative? How much is trying to teach us important moral lessons so that we'll follow the laws of the Torah and the laws that God gave us? I don't know the answer to that. They say that, I mean, there's certain things that are probably symbolic, that people live till 969, Methuselah lived 969 years, it says, and other people lived over 900 years. Is that literally true? I don't know if that's literally true, or again, if that is telling us something in order to teach us lessons. And what is the lesson of that? The lesson of that is, when you allow people to think they're never going to die, human nature is that they're going to commit terrible, sinful lives, and they're going to have terrible lives. And then they're going to do what it says in the Bible that generation was doing. Stealing, killing, sexual immorality, just pure evil. All they did is evil. Constant evil. All day long, constant evil. There was nothing righteous or decent or moral about these people. Nothing kind, nothing righteous, decent, selfish, evil, egotistical, violent, horrific behavior all the time. And that's what happens unless people have the fear. Unless people have the fear of knowing that they're going to die, it shows us why God doesn't let us live 1,000 years or very long lives. If we lived a long life, then we'd say, you know, for the first 500 or 600 years, oh, let me sin and have a good time. I'm still a youngster at the age of 500. It would be a situation where because of people's evil inclination, because of the Yetzer Hara, which means the evil inclination, people would do terrible things. But because we live 70 or 80 years, or whatever the average is now, I think it's about 80 years, because we live an average of about 80 years, and because people get old and get sick and everything else that we see happening, people see their mortality and people have fear. And this gives people the proper perspective and makes people want to do what God commands them to do because they fear the consequences of not doing it because they see that their judgment is coming, that death is coming. They see this happening. They see it and they see it realistically. So there's an important moral lesson here. I think that's one of the more important moral lessons that we can learn from this part of Bereshit, of Sefer Bereshit. Sefer Bereshit being the book of Genesis. Dr. Dan now writes, 4, ISIS or Russia, unquote. Well, both of them are terrible. I mean, ISIS is a serious threat. And Russia is a very serious threat. But right now, Russia is the greater threat. Because Russia has thousands of nuclear bombs. And Russia is helping Muslim terrorist Iran develop nuclear bombs. That's a far greater threat than what ISIS poses at the present time. So I would say that Russia right now is a much greater threat than ISIS, even in Syria. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, 1, discuss Israel's one-eyed bandit Moshe Dayan, unquote. Moshe Dayan was the defense minister of Israel. He was a very evil person. Yimach Shmo v'zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated. There are two things that stand out. I mean, there are many evil things he did. He did horrific things, but two things especially that I'm just going to mention quickly to save time. Number one, in the 1967 Six-Day War, the Arabs in Judea and Samaria, the Arabs in Hebron and in Judea and Samaria started to flee. Thousands of Arabs started to flee their homes and wanted to flee and leave Israel as Israel was liberating Judea and Samaria. So the Arabs were leaving. They were on their way at what the media and what everybody calls the so-called West Bank. It's really Judea and Samaria. The Arabs were fleeing. We were going to lose. And it was the beginning of a panic. We were going to lose all of them. They were panicking. And when that type of panic takes place, we saw in the 1948 War of Independence that the vast majority of Arabs in Israel fled in that war. And the panic was starting. Panic was starting to set in, and thousands were starting to flee for the border to try to get out. We could have easily gotten rid of all of our Arab Muslim terrorist problem. They would have fled. We wouldn't have had Arabs there. The land of Israel would have been ours without the local hostile Arab Muslim population. But Moshe Dayan sent the Israeli army to the border and at gunpoint sent the Arabs back to Hebron, sent them back to the villages in Judea and Samaria. Because he said it wouldn't look good if they all left Israel because we wanted to show them they're going to stay in their homes and we're still going to let them stay here because we want peace. And we want to live together with them. We want to coexist with millions of Arab Muslims who think that we should be destroyed. So that's one of the disasters that he did. Because in 1967, we easily could have gotten the Arabs to flee and leave the land of Israel. We wouldn't have had all of these problems. Easily could have happened. And at that time, the world was very supportive and very sympathetic of Israel. And they saw all the Arabs screaming that they're going to exterminate the Jews. And the world was the public opinion was very pro-Israel at that time still. So this was the perfect opportunity. And Moshe Dayan spoiled it for the Jewish people. Every Jew that's murdered, every catastrophic incident that takes place because of the presence of millions of hostile people in the land of Israel now is because of Moshe Dayan and leaders like him that committed the crime of not letting the Arabs flee when they wanted to. That's one thing he did. The second thing he did on Har HaBayit, on the Temple Mount, he gave the Waqf, which is the Muslim Nazi authority on the Temple Mount, they were so scared when the Israeli army, all the Arabs were terrified of Israel when we were winning in the 1967 Six-Day War. They immediately, with trembling hands, they gave the keys. They handed the keys over to Moshe Dayan. And they said, here, it's yours, yours. They were going to give the Temple Mount, Har HaBayit, to us. So we wouldn't have had the mosques and all the other terrible desecration and horrible things that are taking place there. Moshe Dayan handed the keys back to the Muslim Nazi Waqf, which was preaching day and night, Itbach al Yahud, exterminate, slaughter the Jew. They were screaming day and night until the 67 war. And he gave these Muslim Nazi terrorists, he gave them back the keys and said, no, you're going to control the Temple Mount. You're going to be in charge. We don't want control of the Temple Mount. We don't want control of Har HaBayit. You're going to stay there with your mosques and you'll remain in control. That was Moshe Dayan. What a vile, evil, Judenrat Kapo traitor. May he burn in hell forever. Two, Binyamin now asks about Israel's two-eyed bandit, Yael Dayan. Okay, Yael Dayan is Moshe Dayan's daughter. She was a member of the Knesset from the Meretz party and Miflegat Avodah, which is the Labor Party in Hebrew. Just to show you what a traitor she is. She wrapped herself in the PLO terrorist Fatah flag, a flag that was used to murder thousands of Jews. She literally wrapped the flag around her body and was dancing with the flag. With the flag wrapped around her body. That's the type of traitor she is. I mean, she wraps herself in the flag of Islamic Nazi terrorism. Yimach shma v'zichra shem reshaim yirkav. That means may her name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. And then Binyamin asked me then about three other people here. I'm not going to mention their names. Bill Maniac, Joshua Rosenberg, Stephen Weigang. These three, I don't want to discuss these three people, Binyamin. These three people are people that hate JTF for no reason. And I don't want to discuss I don't want to discuss disgusting individuals. I don't want to even discuss them. I don't even want to give them the notoriety. And then Binyamin asks about John Travolta. Okay. John Travolta. He, of course, for those of you who don't know, he's an American actor. He's a member of the Scientology cult. There's a cult of Scientology. Tom Cruise and John Travolta are members of the Scientology cult. which is a crazy, completely crazy cult. Just, he's a worthless phony. What else can I say? He made a lot of money and was very famous. It went in the 70s, 80s, very famous, made a lot of money, and he does nothing but spread immorality and worthlessness. That's what he's done his whole life. He's a worthless phony. Benjamin now asks about Olivia Newton-John. Olivia Newton-John, another singer and actress. She also supports all the leftist causes. What else? She supports all the leftist causes. She's terrible. She's terrible. Elton John. Oh, Elton John is really terrible. He's the English composer and songwriter. And he's an open homosexual. And so he constantly, day and night, pushes the homosexual agenda, pushes homosexual marriage. He himself says that he's married, quote-unquote, to another man. So he pushes an agenda that's anti-Bible, anti-God, anti-morality. In addition to that, he fights for other left-wing causes. He's a terrible, terrible. I mean, these are people that make this world a much darker place. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, "I would love to see Muslim terrorists drop from IDF helicopters into the Mediterranean Sea at the Leon Klinghoffer Memorial Shark Reef," unquote. Nekama, your suggestions are always excellent suggestions. I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I 100% support it. I think that would be a great idea. Absolutely. Kol hakavod. More power to you, Nekama. I agree with you completely. And we now move to Black Sabbath's question. Black Sabbath writes, and I quote, "One, which of these groups is most damaging? Ebonic blacks, leftists, Muslims, sodomites, or self-hating Jews?" Unquote. Self-hating Jews, because the Jewish people are supposed to be Am Nivchar, the chosen people, Goy Kadosh, a holy nation, a nation of priests, Or La'amim, a light unto the nations. These are the things that God says are destined to be for the Jewish people. The Jewish people are supposed to be, they're the apple of God's eye, and they're supposed to be the light unto the nations to show the world that there is a God, and to show the world what direction we have to go in. And instead, the self-hating Jews do the opposite of what the Jewish people are supposed to do. They're a chilul Hashem, they're a desecration of God's name, and they bring terrible consequences upon the world. Black Sabbath now writes, "To discuss Arthur Miller, the playwright." Okay, Arthur Miller was another intermarried, self-hating Jew. He made a big deal in the 1950s, testifying before the McCarthy Committee because he was friends with all types of communists. A leftist, a self-hating Jew, intermarried. The guy made huge amounts of money. His play, Death of a Salesman, is one of the classic plays. I mean, a very talented guy. Very talented. A lot of these self-hating Jews are brilliant and very talented. Death of a Salesman is one of the greatest plays in American theater that was ever produced. And he's the one who wrote Death of a Salesman. Very talented guy, made tremendous amount of money and fame, and had fame, fortune, money for many years. And used it all for what? For leftist causes, to intermarry, to do bad things instead of doing good things. What a difference someone like that could make in the world. What a difference he could have made in the world. But he chose to do evil. He chose to do evil. Okay, thank you, Black Sabbath. We go now to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim, your thoughts on Ethan Bronner." Ethan Bronner is the self-hating Jewish New York Nazi Times correspondent who was the Jerusalem bureau chief for the New York Nazi Times. Terrible. I mean, just constantly pumping out article after article about how we have to coexist with the Arabs, and how Israel is to blame, and how unless Israel commits suicide, there's no hope for the Jewish people. We've got to go back to the pre-1967 suicide borders, or there's no hope. That was the theme of all of his articles. Endless stream of non-stop Jewish anti-Semitism, because he's a Jewish anti-Semite, like the other Jewish writers at the New York Nazi Times. And then Gimatria writes, what about Professor, quote-unquote, Khalil Shikaki, unquote? I don't know who Khalil Shikaki is. I don't know who that is. I think he's a he's a professor. I guess he probably is joining with the other so-called Arab professors in writing things against Israel. I assume that that's probably true, especially since Gimatria puts the professor in quotes, so Gimatria obviously knows something about him, but I don't really know enough about him to comment about him. Gimatria now writes, and I quote, is he more evil than Eva Moses Kor, unquote? No. No, that's for sure not, because Eva Moses Kor, who is a Jewish woman, she was one of the twins that was experimented on by Dr. Joseph Mengele, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, Shem Reshaim Yirkav, during the Holocaust. She was experimented on by this monster, Dr. Mengele, the Angel of Death. He was known as the Angel of Death. And she said that we have to forgive Dr. Mengele, and we have to forgive... Dr. Mengele is the one who, when the Jews came into the concentration camp, if he pointed to the right, you would go to work and maybe stay alive a little bit longer in the Nazi concentration camp. If he pointed to the left, you would immediately go to the gas chamber and be suffocated to death, and then burned, and then burned to death. And suffocated to death and then burned, and then your body would be burned. Some people actually were burned to death. Some people were thrown into ovens alive. Babies, especially babies, were thrown into the ovens alive. They usually would throw the babies into the ovens immediately. And small children they throw into the ovens immediately. But if he pointed to the left, if he didn't think you were good enough to do work, you were immediately sent to the gas chambers and the ovens, immediate death. And if you point to the right, you had a chance, a small chance of surviving, and even there, eventually you would probably die because the conditions were so terrible, you'd get sick, and then they would take you to the ovens and the gas chambers and get rid of you afterwards, eventually too. But he did that for huge number, hundreds of thousands of Jews he murdered. He was responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Jews, and this beast, Eva Moses Kor, Yimach Shma V'Zichra, may her name and memory be obliterated, she says we have to forgive him and forgive all the Nazi war criminals. What scum. Thank you, Gimatria. We go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, thoughts, Jewish women who abort Jewish baby to get impregnated by Muslim or Arnold Schwarzenegger or Prince Charles or CIA Director Brennan, are they closet muzzies? I don't know. I mean, obviously a Jewish woman that she's willing to abort a Jewish baby to get impregnated by... I'm not sure I understand the question, Khiram. I'm not sure I understand the question. Maybe you can clarify the question for us. I'm not sure I understand it, but obviously we're against Jewish women, first of all, aborting Jewish babies. Period. We're against them aborting the Jewish babies. And obviously if Jewish women get impregnated by all types of characters that you're mentioning here, obviously we're against that as well. But other than that, I'm not sure I understand the question. Thank you, Hiram. We go now to Mr. VSS, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please educate, inform, and enlighten about the Nuremberg trials, unquote. Okay, the Nuremberg trials were held after World War II, dealing with the Nazi war criminals. And they were such a farce. You know, Stalin was the dictator of Russia, Churchill the Prime Minister of England, and Roosevelt the President of the United States. Yimach Shmam V'Zichram to all of them. May their names and memories be obliterated. All evil people that enabled the Holocaust to take place. Stalin, though, he hated the Germans because of what they did to his country, what they did to the Soviet Union, what they did to Russia. So he said, just to teach them a lesson, we should take 50,000 to 100,000 of the German Nazi officers, the leading German Nazi officers, 50,000 to 100,000, just summarily execute them, which I think was an excellent suggestion. Churchill said, no way. I would rather die, Churchill said, than see them executed for fighting for their country. The German Nazi officers, Churchill is worried about them because he said they were fighting for their country. The German Nazis who carried out the Holocaust. That was the great Winston Churchill, great in quotes, whom Jews are so fond of. Anyway, in the end, thanks to Churchill, Churchill saved the lives of tens of thousands of German Nazi war criminals. Churchill saved their lives. Millions of Jews he murdered He and Roosevelt murdered them by refusing to take any action to bomb the rail lines leading to Auschwitz, to bomb the concentration camps. They murdered millions, and Churchill closed the doors to the land of Israel. All the Jews could have escaped. They all could have gone to the land of Israel. The Nazis would have let them go to the land of Israel. They would let them leave. Churchill stopped all that. He closed the doors to the land of Israel, made sure they'd be trapped in Nazi Europe, and he and Roosevelt made sure the Nazi war machinery would be able to carry out the Holocaust. So he murdered millions of Jews and saved tens of thousands of German Nazi war criminals. That's the great Churchill, the great history of Churchill. Yimach shmo v'zichro. Anyway, what they eventually did do was the Nuremberg trials, which was such a farce. A small group, I don't remember exactly how many, several dozen Nazi war criminals, even if it was that many, I don't know, were put on trial. Some of them were acquitted. Imagine finding Nazi war criminals with all the witnesses and everything else against them, finding them not guilty. Some of them were acquitted and allowed to walk for the crimes they committed. Others were given prison sentences. Slap on the wrist, were given prison sentences in cozy prisons. And some of them were hanged. There were some that were hanged. Big deal. But not many. A relative handful were hanged. That was the Nuremberg war crimes trial. It was the ultimate farce, the ultimate miscarriage of justice. A handful of German Nazis are hanged after the German people murdered 6 million Jews. And this just goes to show that the only way the Jewish people are going to get justice is when we have a Jewish state with Jewish leaders that carry out Jewish justice against enemies of the Jewish people. Thank you, Mr. VSS. I almost said Mr. VHS. Mr. VSS. Okay. And we go now to Imachnik, who writes, and I quote, "Why did God place enemy countries surrounding Israel? What test is God giving the Jews?" Unquote. Okay, good question. God wants hundreds of millions of Muslims to surround tiny Israel so that he could win big victories for the Jewish people and show Israel winning six-day wars to prove, beyond any doubt, that he is God and that Judaism and the Bible are true and that Islam and the Quran are not true, that they're false and it's a lie. When Israel defeats the Muslim enemies, the Bible is defeating the Quran. The prophecies of the Bible are coming true as opposed to the prophecies of the Quran. And God is proving his presence in the world and is proving his power in the world. That's what God is trying to do. Imachnik now writes, "Is it time to make Bernie Sanders videos?" Unquote. I don't think so, for one reason. Bernie Sanders is an evil person. Yimach shmo v'zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated. Very, very evil, self-hating Jew. The worst you can imagine. I mean, we have stuff on him. Boy, do we have stuff on him. Against Israel, against his fellow Jews, supporting every anti-Semite under the sun. I mean, the lowest communist scum that you can imagine is Bernie Sanders. Of course, intermarried, assimilated as well, naturally. But we are doing videos against Hillary Clinton and not against Bernie Sanders is because I think Hillary Clinton is going to win. So she's the target right now. I think she's going to win the nomination, and there's a high chance she'll win the presidency. I mean, America did vote twice for Barack Hussein Obama. This is a country that votes for left-wing Democrats right now. Majority of the American people have twice voted for left-wing Democrats. There is a real chance she could win, a very strong chance. God forbid. So she's the problem now. She's the target now. And if Bernie Sanders gives her a hard time, or anyone running for the nomination gives her a hard time, we want that. We want that to happen. We want her to have as hard a time as possible. I hope Joe Biden gets in the race as well, because I want her to have as hard a time as possible of getting the nomination. I think she is going to get the nomination, and I think she is the biggest threat to us in terms of the November election. If Bernie Sanders becomes a big threat, if that situation changes, then of course we're going to do a lot of videos against Bernie Sanders, and we have loads of material, tons of material against that self-hating Judenrat capo. Thank you, Imachnik. We go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Can you please share with us stories of one or more women with JDL who made a huge difference for the organization's goals, unquote. Oh, there were so many. Let me just mention one. I don't want to mention names because she doesn't want to be publicized. There was one woman in particular who never wanted any publicity, always worked behind the scenes. She raised money for us. She organized rallies and demonstrations. She organized the rallies and demonstrations. She got me into places, speaking dates and all types of things, got me into places and got things going for us that would never have happened if not for her. I mean, she was just a Jewish heroine. In the end, she even engaged in a very important illegal act for Soviet Jewry. I don't want to mention which incident that she paid a price for legally in order to help free our Jewish brothers and sisters that were behind the Iron Curtain. And to this day, she doesn't want anybody to know about it. She doesn't want her name mentioned. But she really is a heroic Jewish woman, a wonderful, magnificent Jewish woman. May God bless her. May God bless her in this world and in the next. And she's just one example of many that did play a role in JDL. We had others as well who did play a role and who did help us in our campaign to save Soviet Jewry and in our campaign, of course, to eventually promote the Kahanist agenda in Israel. Thank you, EB. And we go now to Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you explain the rules and reasons behind the prohibition of electricity on Shabbat, unquote. Yes, great question. There are 39 things that we're not allowed to do on Shabbat, on the Jewish Sabbath. 39 things. And how do we know about them? We know about them because there were 39 things God commanded the Jews not to do when they were building the tabernacle, before they built the Holy Temple in the desert, when they're still wandering in the desert. When we got out of Egypt, we built the tabernacle. And when we were building the tabernacle to God, there were 39 things God said you can't do on Shabbat. 39 things you can't do. And from that, we know the 39 things that we're not allowed to do on Shabbat in general. Electricity is creating something new. Starting a fire or electricity, lighting fire or electricity is creating something new. God rested on the seventh day. What does that mean? There were 6 days or 6 eras. They were really eras. They were not really days. They were eras. 6 periods of time where God was actively involved in changing nature and in changing everything on a constant basis, in creating and developing the world. 6 periods of time. On the seventh period of time, which we're in right now, we're in the seventh period of time right now, God rested, which means he allowed the laws of nature to take over. In other words, the first 6 periods of time, God was in direct control of everything. He directly controlled things. The seventh day, the Sabbath, which we're now in the Sabbath of history, in the seventh period of time, and by the way, this is not Chaim ben Pesach, of course, saying this. This wouldn't be Chaim ben Pesach saying something like this. Obviously, I'm getting this from Chazal, from the rabbinic scholars. In the seventh period of time, God allows the laws of nature to control this world and allows the laws of nature to have tremendous power over the world, and he seemingly is absent from the world. The word olam in Hebrew comes from the word, olam is how you say world in Hebrew. That's how you say the world in Hebrew, olam. And it comes from the word ne'elam, which means disappear or not be there. And God is seemingly absent from this world in order to give human beings free will. And for that reason, he allows the laws of nature to seemingly control things. Instead of him directly, if he was directly controlling things, we wouldn't have free will. If everybody saw God as directly controlling everything and his presence was obvious in the world, we wouldn't have free will. So to create a world of free will so that human beings could earn their way into the next world and earn eternal life and earn paradise, in order to have that, God created a situation where he is seemingly absent. And that's the Sabbath. That's the Sabbath of history. The Sabbath of history is the seventh day of history. The seventh era in history, which is what we've been in now for thousands of years. And The world existed before Adam and Eve. But Adam and Eve were the beginning of important history. It's the beginning of the important... Human beings existed before Adam and Eve. But the important history, of the world started with Adam and Eve. That was the beginning of the important history, of the meaningful history, because that's when human beings were finally at a point where they could accept God's laws, where they were at a they had reached a moral point, a point of civilized behavior where they could actually accept God's laws. So that's the significant point of history. And this seventh era, the seventh Sabbath, how do we get to the number seven? Why do we have seven? Why are there 7 days in a week? Why is everything revolving around the seven? Because nature, natural things are six. Nature is six, right? Why is nature six? North, south, east, and west. The four directions, the four winds, the four sides, four directions. That's four, right? There are four winds. And then above and below, that makes six. So six represents, symbolically represents nature, represents the physical world, the physical manifestations of the world. Seven, the seventh, is the in-between. In between the four winds and in between the top and the bottom is seven. That's the seventh. That's the Sabbath. And that's also spiritual dimensions there, because it's spiritual, because you don't see what's in between, and it's spiritual. And the eighth is going to be above the laws of nature. But anyway, what's important is when we reach the eighth era of history, when we finish the Sabbath and we reach the eighth era of history, that's going to be above the laws of nature. I know all of this sounds, I don't know, it sounds new to a lot of people. This is Kabbalistic and it sounds new to a lot of people. But we don't do these 39 things, including electricity. We don't do these things on Shabbat, on the Sabbath, because we want to have a taste of what the world will be like when we don't have the physical, when we don't have physical need anymore. Even if we are in our physical bodies, in the world to come, we won't have a world of physical need anymore. And when that happens, when we're living forever and we don't have a world of physical need, and I could go into tremendous detail about this if you want on future programs, but when we have a world where there is no physical need, we'll be enjoying a whole different type of existence. And then God's presence in the world will be obvious, and God will be the obvious open ruler of the world, and it'll be paradise. And we want a taste of that, and you get a taste of that. When you observe Shabbat, you get a taste of that. You get a taste of the incredible peace and tranquility and the beauty of not answering phones and not being on the computer and not watching the news and not all the other stuff. It's just, it's something that, it's so beautiful, it separates you from all of that, and it gives you a taste of the world to come, when we're going to have true peace and true tranquility and true spiritual and physical joy. Thank you, Maimonides, and I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.